Accession number 27185, reel 22.
Major Barras, reel 22.
Sorry, I'd like to mention before we leave B3 and go to war, which I omitted last time. What I didn't say was that although we were with 50 div, we were an 56 brigade was an independent brigade, and the plan was that on D plus 3 we would revert to command of 7th Armoured Division. I think the idea was that we would support them because the Queen's Lorried Infantry Brigade, which was their normal infantry in 7th Armoured, wasn't due to come ashore for several days afterwards, so we had to stand in for them.
Had you done any training for this role with 22nd
Army? No, I don't know. We hadn't. Mm. The first we heard of it was in B3, and General Bobby Erskine, the commander in GOC 7th Armoured, came down and gave us a briefing, which was he could have been still in the desert, actually, by the way he was talking. He got a map up on the wall. I remember this very distinctly, and we were in a hut. And it was down to company commanders, I think, in that particular briefing. And he was sweeping his hand over this map and saying, we have a little party here, as he called it, and then we go on to here and we have a little party here. I think, actually, he was probably talking about the advance towards Via Bocage, which was the ultimate objective of 7th Armoured at that time, and in which we got caught up on, or in, rather, for the first phase later after we'd landed.
Remember what impression that made on you when you said it was as though he was in the desert? And
I can't remember. It was a bit vague, all very vague. But at that time it wasn't going to happen until D plus 3, and we were more concentrating our minds on D-Day and what we had to do, and I think we saw that's something in the future, and when we get there they'll tell us what to do. So that was our briefing. We had one of his parties, which we'll talk about later.
Had you had any experience of the sort of things that lorried infantry had to do?
Oh, yes.
And debussing.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We'd done quite a bit of that in our training on Salisbury Plain. In fact, we got involved in doing demonstrations there with tanks and lorried infantry, yeah. And riding on tanks, too. We did, I remember. So we did know how to cooperate with tanks because we were going to have the 8th Armoured Brigade with 50 div, and the Sherwood Foresters, or Rangers rather, in particular, who were going to cooperate with us for quite some time, at least until we went to 7th Armoured. So we had done some training.
When you were riding on tanks, what sort of tanks were you practicing? Were you practicing?
They were Churchills.
Churchills.
Yeah.
How many men could you get on a Churchill?
I think a section.
So you got 8 to 10 men on.
Oh no, not as big as that. 7.
7 men on.
Yeah, roughly, I think. I couldn't swear to it, but I think the idea was a section per tank, as long as you didn't go and sit on top of the engine at the back. It's always a hazard. Couple of other things I'd like to mention. First is we had a new second-in-command of the battalion, which I don't think I've mentioned before, Geoffrey Elliott, who came to us from the Royal West Kents. I have a sort of blockage trying to remember seconds-in-command. We didn't sort of come into contact with them an awful lot, usually the adjutant or the CO. Of course, second-in-commands are very important because they usually did all the training and administration in the background. But this one is particularly important because, as we will see later, he becomes very important to the battalion. Now, he joined us in B3. The other thing is that we got jeeps. Now, I don't think we had jeeps. We probably had them when we mobilised in Clacton. We got them for the first time. Excellent battlefield vehicles for company commanders to get in and out of at short notice and driving over rough ground. How we managed before with what was called a PU, I think, sort of pickup vans, like sort of baker's vans, with little seats at the back. I think they could get about half a dozen people sitting at the back. But of course, with a jeep, you can only get two, but you don't want to carry a large number of people around with you. If you've got your signaller there, your driver, your signaller, and probably a runner, that's orderly, that's all you need for yourself.
What was your scale of issue of those? Was it one per company, or did you have more?
No, we have one. I was the only person in my company who had one. But I think there were more of them in the specialist platoons, like mortars and I don't know about carriers. Probably carriers didn't have too many because they were, got their own mode of transport.
What about the universal carrier itself? I mean, could you use that as a way of getting about?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I had a carrier as well, which we used to carry the ammunition around, I think, as far as I can remember. But no, I could always use a carrier. Very useful, too.
Which do you prefer on the whole? Did you think the Jeep was a better way of getting about all the Bren carrier?
Oh no, the Jeep, because you could move much quicker. It's more manoeuvrable too. I mean, a carrier's fine if you really need it to get over open ground or if it's particularly hole pocked. But normally I get around the Jeep.
You'd be less secure in a Jeep, wouldn't you?
Well, you would be less secure, yeah, but you normally used it for going back to old groups and going backwards normally. I mean, if I wanted to visit any of my platoons, of course, I went round the company and I went on foot. Very often the Jeep was used for taking wounded back as well. I mean, if we couldn't get hold of stretcher bearers or that sort of thing. Although we did have stretcher bearers, we had 4 stretcher bearers attached to each company, who did magnificent work, absolutely magnificent. Of course, all the vehicles were waterproofed, as you probably know already. They had to be waterproofed before we embarked. And I'm sure that was done in B3 camp.
What materials were you using?
To waterproof them?
To waterproof, yes.
I don't know, it was some sort of greasy stuff. I know it was stuff which you, when we got the other side and eventually met up with our transport, which we did in Buho, the F echelon that was, the forward carriers and 1500 weight trucks. They had to be de-waterproofed there. And I think it was done in such a way that it could be easily taken off and rubbed out. Of course, the tanks, with the DD tanks, which swam ashore, when they got ashore, they used to blow it out and make such a noise when they blew it out, the enemy thought they were being shelled. So I was told. But no, there wasn't a problem there. As soon as we met up, they came across in different craft, of course. And when we met up there, they were soon de-waterproofed and they were able to move with us. The 3 tonners, the B echelon, I don't know when it came across. It must have come across quite much later, I think. Probably not until the artificial harbour was put up, Mulberry.
So you're in B3.
Yeah.
And you were ready to go.
Yep.
What happened actually on the day that you moved?
Well, we were put into 3-ton lorries. At least I was, my platoon. Although I would have had my... I don't know whether... of course, the vehicles would have been loaded separately. So I may have lost my Jeep by then. I may not have had a Jeep at all. We may not have had any individual vehicles whatsoever. All the battalion vehicles have probably gone, or most of them are gone, the F echelon anyway, and leaving behind the B echelon to load later. And I imagine that we were picked up by an RASC company, 3-tonners, or troop carriers, because we had troop carriers by then, and taken to Lymington.
When was that? Was that on the 5th?
That was on the 5th. Oh, on the 4th.
4th of June.
Yeah, it was on the 4th. No, the 3rd.
3rd of June.
Yes, that was on the 3rd of June. Because we were... I'm not sure at what stage we were told that... we were going I don't know when we were probably waited until we got aboard and then they told us that we were going to land on the morning of the 5th. That was the original idea, wasn't it?
Yes.
So they took us to Lymington and we boarded our landing craft infantry large.
Oh.
There we had a Canadian crew I don't want to be rude, but our experiences with American ones weren't very good, so I was glad to have a Canadian crew.
What was wrong with the Americans then?
Well, they landed us in the wrong... They tried to get us disembark when we were way out in the...
That was on the sandbank. Rehearsal exercise.
Yes, that's yeah. right.
When they were running in and they...
That's right. Yes. Came on the sandbank, lowered the gear at the sides and said, OK, men, this is it. I said, no, thanks. So you had to pull out and go in. They're very inexperienced.
How many of you were there on the landing craft infantry large? What was the
Well, a company and a half. I think its capacity was something like 180 or something. I had my full company on board and half of somebody else's, so I was OC troop, so to speak. And we went round from having loaded... One thing about the before we loaded, I can remember it was almost a sort of festival atmosphere around the place. The sun was shining, I remember, on that day. And as we made our way down towards the quayside where the LCIs were alongside, we passed areas where you could get topped up. In other words, if you lost something or wanted something, they had it there. They even had reserves there. Somebody had been sick and gone. They said, right, here's a man, you know, and gave you an extra man. They even had Bren guns and rifles. So, I mean, if at the last moment, I suppose, somebody in the camp had found that their Bren gun had gone US and they couldn't, they made it good.
Did your company have to pick anything?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't remember. But I do remember this. And we all went off. Nobody would have been left behind on that. Absolutely not. Everybody. If anybody had been told they couldn't go, they'd have been very, very disappointed. Mm. We were all gung-ho to go. And then we went round to Southampton in a very choppy... It was already choppy, the sea there, even though it was... we were in the... more or less in the Solent after we'd... been going a bit. It's very choppy. Then we went along, so we went into a basin where the old transatlantic liners used to go, and we were stacked in here, masses of them, LCIs. Must have been the whole of the 56th Brigade, I imagine. And I mean, we were three craft out from the quayside, so every time we wanted to go, if anybody wanted or could go ashore, we had to go over the decks of two other craft before we could get there.
Cross-decking.
Yes, that's right.
Was there any movement to and from the quay from your...
Oh, yes, there was, because there was a big custom shed there, and that was turned into a sort of naffy-come-rest place where people could go in sections or ones and twos and so as they were allowed to. Go and have a cup of char and a wad and sit down and for a bit get off the ship. It was very useful actually when it was postponed for 24 hours,
yes.
Because otherwise they'd all been cooped up in his boats.
Was there any accommodation for them on the LSI?
Yes, there were troop decks underneath, and there were cabins above for officers, although we didn't use them very much.
How did the news of the postponement get here? Do you remember how you heard
I
that?
I can't remember, actually. I really don't remember somebody coming along and saying it's being postponed 24 hours.
Do you remember what the reaction was when you got that news?
Not really. I mean, there were... The chaps were pretty sort of stolid sort of characters, and they were prepared to sort of sit it out and carry on playing cards or dominoes or whatever they were doing before. I don't think it worried anybody very much. Nobody had hysterics.
I think it might have caused a certain sense of disappointment, but if they were all wound up together...
No, I don't think so. I think if it had been postponed for any distance after that... I mean, well, it was Monty who had said they either had to go on the 4th, the 5th, 6th, or maybe marginally on the 7th, because he wanted a rising tide and a moonlit night. which only occurred once a month.
That's right. He would have been off until July.
Unless he did without the moon, in which case we could have gone on we could have gone on 2 weeks later. Mm. But that would have caused enormous problems, both the morale of soldiers and security. Mm. And I don't see how they could have put it together again.
It would have been very difficult.
It would have been exceedingly difficult. Yes. And although, what was it, Wing Commander Stagg?
Stagg, yes.
Who, to my mind, is one of the big heroes of this enterprise. When he said there was a sort of a window on the 6, it was Montgomery who first said, right, we're going to go, well, let's go, wasn't it? And then the Admiral, Ramsay, who got us all back from Dunkirk, mustn't make forget him. It was Lee Mallory, I think, who sucked his teeth a bit because he didn't want the parachutes blown off course.
I think it was bound to have a much more catastrophic effect on air operations.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was on the ground operations or amphibious.
So, although Eisenhower gets the credit for saying let's go, well, he very rightly consulted his commanders first. In the end, he said let's go on the 6. So, I don't know at what stage of the proceedings we got the news. Instead of talking to them, you know, there's very few people realise that all the commanders and chiefs of the various three services were British. Although Monty wasn't called commander-in-chief, he was in charge of the Allied armies. I don't think that's certainly not known by the Americans, I wouldn't think.
No.
And the other thing about it is, whilst we're talking in general terms, is that we landed more troops, as you probably know, the British and Canadians were 75,000, I think, and the Americans were 57,000, I think it was, something like that.
They put 21,000 ashore on Utah Beach.
Yeah.
On D-Day.
Right.
And I'm not sure how many on Omaha, because the figures for Omaha are very uncertain.
Yes, yes.
Given all the casualties that they suffered.
But it was a British-driven enterprise, really, when you come to think that Monty decided to put two more divisions in and the airborne. Thank God. I mean, if there were only three divisions, we'd have been boxed in and pushed back in the sea again, I think, without any trouble at all.
It'd certainly been easier for the Germans to cope with it.
Certainly, yeah. Yeah. And also, of course, it was going to be a one-core landing, wasn't it?
So, it was, yes.
Or everybody coming up behind would all get their lines of communication all mixed
up. Indeed, it would have been landing in column, effectively.
It's such an elementary consideration. You wonder how the... Was it General Morgan? Was it?
Sir Frederick Morgan.
Yeah. Yes.
He was Cossack.
Yeah, he never forgave Monty, would he?
No, he didn't.
No, I don't think anybody in Eisenhower's headquarters ever forgave him for...
No.
But it was the way he did it, I think, really.
It was the style rather than...
It was his style,
decision.
Yeah.
Morgan went off to Italy. He went to Alexander's headquarters.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he did. Yes.
So he couldn't stick it.
Well, he was just sent because it was recognised that he would not be happy.
No, right.
If he was unhappy, it would be disruptive, so that's he was sent off to...
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. Well, I didn't know, man.
Yeah. Well, Alexander was a much more tactful commander.
Yes, yes,
was.
I'm sure he made him at home.
Yes, he did.
So, anyway, better get back to Lymington.
Well, Southampton, we've got to Southampton.
Oh, Southampton, I beg your pardon, of course, yes. So there we were, waiting to go on the evening of the 5th now, as opposed to the evening of the 4th.
When did you actually start moving?
Must have been in the evening, round about...
Evening of the 5th?
Evening of the 5th, yes. It wasn't getting dark at all, but I know it was later. It must have been about 5 o'clock to 6-ish, I think, that there was sort of movement. I can't remember what orders we got, how much we were told, but I do distinctly remember sort of late afternoon, there was sort of the crews on board all these little landing craft began to look more purposeful than they had before. They were doing things. And then one or two of the landing craft pulled aside and began to move off. And then eventually we got away and we're going out with the rest of them. pulled out into the Southampton Water, as it would have been then. Yeah.
So you were heading south.
We were heading south. That's right.
Were you in? Was your landing craft part of a recognisable pattern or formation of?
Oh, there were several there. I can't remember exactly what formation we were in, but I think we moved probably as a brigade.
Yes.
In which case, I tried to work out how many LCIs there would be. On the basis that you probably had five per battalion, I should think. You probably had 20, something like 20 per brigade.
You need five for each battalion, then you need at least five for the brigade headquarters, and other troops attached. Presumably you had a field company.
I should think so, yes.
And you had medical support.
Yeah.
Did you have? I don't think you had a tank regiment attached as such.
No, not... it
not
was
to the your brigade?
No. No, not at that stage. Mm. I know the Sherwood Rangers joined us after the...
Yes.
When we...
They were with 231 Brigade for D-Day.
Yes.
I think they were part of 8th.
8th Armoured Brigade. That's right.
Which was distributed, because the 4th, 7th Dragoon Guards were with 69th Brigade.
I see.
So they'd have been in, forward.
That's right. That's another thing I don't think is understood, that each division, infantry division, had an armoured brigade in support.
Yes.
So we didn't just have three armoured divisions, as everybody thinks. They had this massive...
Well, there were a lot of independent armoured brigades.
That's right.
Which were very flexible. They could be attached.
Yeah. So we had a lot more armour than just three armoured divisions, as some people...
A great deal more armour.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So anyway, we sailed sedately down Southampton Water. When we got to the end, I think we turned west to go round the Needles. And then we began moving about a bit.
So you'd been going past Hurst Castle and...
Yes.
On your right and the Needles on your left.
Yeah, but before we got to the Needles, one of the things that always remains in my mind's eye, is we sailed along, that we saw on the... along the coastline of the Isle of Wight were some big grey shapes of the Royal Navy ships. There must have been at least one battleship there. I don't know what it was. I don't think they could have been bombardment, because they came down from Scotland, didn't they? And they were already on the move, apparently, when the...
bombardment groups were halfway across, I should think, by that time.
Yes.
Getting into position.
They could have been one of the others that came up behind, like Nelson or... Renown, or I think they came later. Anyway, as we were passing, I looked across, and they were about a mile away. We could see that the decks were full of sailors, all the way along the decks. Every sort of perch you could get them on, they were on. There must have been, nearly 2,000, I suppose. I think that's a sort of complement of a battleship. And as we watched them, we saw them take their hats off and wave in the air, and then a sort of a two or three seconds later, a great big roar came across the sea, and it did it three times. We couldn't do very much, we just sort of waved back. But it was most impressive, it really was. It's always remained in my mind. And I think for the first time, we really understood what a sort of large, huge enterprise we were on.
It's a naval tradition, isn't it, that triple cheer?
Yes, that's right. And they wave their hats.
Yes.
But it was the terrific roar came across the sea. You could just hear it, it impressed us all, that. Raised our morale, if it needed raising at all. And off we went, and then we went round the Needles, and then we faced right up to the heavy seas. And we really began to move around, I remember. I'd rather unwisely... We had the choice of two soups. You could either have cocoa, or you could have... Well, that wasn't soup. You could either have cocoa, or you could have kidney soup. Rather unwisely, I chose kidney soup. And they were in a tin, which you could... self-heating tin, which I think you use today by sort of... adventurers and people going off to the Arctic and things, but you pulled something underneath the tin and that lit something inside which heated it, and it was very rich, and although I managed to keep it down, I certainly felt a bit queasy at times having had that. And of course the soldiers down below were being very sick, using their vomit bags, And they had been given pills, but it wasn't. There was no, they were under no obligation to have pills. It was merely to have if they wanted to. But I suspect it had some help some, but there was still.
But were all of them sick? Or
no, not all of them, but there was too many, really, for the sake of the rest of them who weren't being sick. But you know, I went visited down there several times. I didn't get into my bunk. I went up on the deck and spent the what I when I wasn't down there with the captain on the bridge, whilst we bucketed about.
What sort of crew did he have? What sort of complement was there on the?
I really can't remember. I probably didn't see them all anyway. But there was there were two officers on the bridge. One was the captain, I suppose. The other one was his sort of nominal number one. Or, but they were very good, very competent. I thought they'd been well trained. And we were going to have to survive this sea for about another 12 to 14 hours.
Do you have any idea of what sort of speed you were making?
I haven't any idea at all. No. I mean, the thing is that there must have been, well, I'm told there were something like 5,000 ships and craft and everything else involved in this enterprise, and they were all sailing together at the same speed, the same direction.
Yes.
So our speed was not what we could do if we wanted to, but it was governed by the speed of the convoy.
Yeah.
Or the whole enterprise has unrolled itself across the channel. Mm-hmm. With, I think, 200 minesweepers in front, something like that.
And on the flanks, too.
And on the flanks, yeah. What is so marvellous is the seamanship. I mean, I just don't understand how they kept station in the dark with no lights and
no
in
lights.
That sea. No lights, yeah.
Did they have radar on the bridge?
No, I can't remember that. But obviously there was no radio. You couldn't use wireless silence. There was some. I did read somewhere that there were rays pushed out from the UK, so that they could keep lines.
Yes.
But that would surely have been picked up. Yeah, that might have been picked up. I would have thought by the Germans on the other side.
I suppose if they'd had the right sort of receiver, but that we had developed. Navigational guidance systems using rays for aircraft.
That's right, yeah.
There was one called HS2 and another one called Oboe.
Oboe, yes, that's right.
They have adapted those, and I think the Germans did catch up with them, but we were always a step ahead.
Oh, I see. So they could have been used on the surface, on the... Yeah.
It seems possible. I wouldn't swear to it.
Well, whatever happened, the Germans slept fitfully in their beds with posted sentries.
Did you get any sleep?
No.
Was this because the sea was too rough, or you were too excited, or some other?
No, I wasn't particularly excited, but I think I just felt that it was an occasion to be on the bridge and going around looking at the troops and say, well, a lot of people got much sleep. We were just glad to be put ashore the next day, actually.
Yes.
But of course, even Rommel, who was B group, wasn't he, Commander? His idea that we would land full tide at dawn. So he said, well, that's not going to happen, so I'll go home and have a holiday. So he wasn't there either.
His wife's birthday.
It was his wife's birthday. I thought it was his birthday. It was his wife's, was it? Mrs. Rommel.
Mrs. Rommel.
Yes. Fräulein. Frau.
Yes.
So he wasn't there. So they couldn't have... got much indication that we were coming. This just astounds me how we kept the secret of the two things that were important, time and place. There was that huge amount of material and planning that went on beforehand, because it'd been going on for years, actually, hadn't it? Anyway, so there we are, ploughing our way across the channel. And then dawn came, very grey it was, I remember. The grey sea, grey skies. And then we began to see all that was around us, all these ships, craft, and so forth. And the barrage below.